separate and distinct acts of child rape and child molestation. Under this court's decision in Land, that creates a potential double jeopardy problem. This means it must be manifestly apparent from the record that the jury did not rely on the same act to convict Mr. Benson of rape and molestation. Now, the state relies...
Manifestly apparent the state was not seeking...
Well, it's both. I mean, in much, the court says both that the state was not seeking a conviction based on the same act, but also that the jury did not rely on the same act. And there's... Basically, it's a really rigorous review that this court undertakes, and the Much court says that really expressly. And now the state is relying basically exclusively on its purported election in closing to say that the double jeopardy problem was cured. Now that is both legally and factually incorrect, because we have the Supreme Court's decision in Keir saying that closing argument can't be read in isolation, and a state's election in closing is not enough to cure a potential double jeopardy problem.
I guess the state here, their counterpoint would be, well, we aren't just relying on an election. The election was crystal clear, but we also have a situation where we have just a general defense. There's the defense offered, well, these two girls are seeking the attention of their mother. That was the focus of the defense, so we don't have a defense that's... some of these occurred, some didn't, the wrong number occurred.
Well, to respond to your first point, we don't have a crystal clear election. In fact, there is no election. The state, in closing, points to the oral genital contact for the rape, but then with the molestation, points to conduct that could support a molestation conviction, but never elects specific acts. The state at no point says, all right, I want you to rely on this type of conduct or this act for count one, and so on and so forth. I point the court specifically to RP 231. The state specifically says you have 7, 8, maybe 12 acts to choose from. There's a lot more than 3 child molestations that happened involving this girl. And so the state is relying on its Petrich instruction rather than an election. So this is readily distinguishable, particularly from Peña-Fuentes, where you have an election and also a clear line that the state is drawing between rape and molestation. We don't have that here because we don't have an instruction on penetration, which in Peña-Fuentes was the line between rape and molestation. And so we don't have the state making a clear distinction between these two types of acts.
What part of the state's closing argument directly or indirectly implies it's relying on the oral genital contact, the one incident of oral genital contact for a molestation charge?
Well, we don't have the state specifically saying you can rely on the oral genital contact for molestation, but that's where this court has to undertake a rigorous review to ensure the jury is not relying on that act. We also never have the state saying you can't rely on that and you have to rely on distinct acts of rape and molestation to convict Mr. Benson of those charges. The state, you know, spends most of its time in closing talking about the credibility of the girls and not the specific acts that align with the convictions.
I guess when I get to Fuentes and I read the Supreme Court's analysis in that case, where they load up on the election and then they say, and we've got a few other variables here, how can you read this closing argument by the state to be anything but here's the conduct that's the basis for the rape charge, here's the categories of conduct that are the basis for the molestation charges?
Well, and that's where we go back to Land. And here, based on the instructions, which make the oral genital contact the same in both fact and law, even not under Land, it's both rape and molestation. And so that means it has to be manifestly apparent that the state is not seeking convictions based on the same acts. And we don't have that, particularly because the jury is instructed it needs to find separate and distinct acts of molestation. And so that would imply to the jury that it doesn't need to find a separate and distinct act of rape. It can rely on the same act for both rape and molestation. Not to mention the prosecutor talks about penetration being the difference between rape and molestation, but that's inconsistent with the jury instructions in this case.
Well, if the jury follows the instructions, the definition of sexual intercourse is limited, doesn't even bring in penetration, which is consistent with the state's theory, is not that there was a penetration.
Right. And so the jury would presumably disregard that portion of the state's argument, and so we don't have a situation like Peña-Fuentes where there is a clear line between rape and molestation. In fact, they're the same, both in fact and law, unlike in Peña-Fuentes, which is recognized in Land as that's the difference between these two crimes. And furthermore, much is really clear that it's the rare circumstance where the record as a whole cures a double jeopardy problem. In that case, you have five acts, five charges, 5-2 convict instructions. Here we have way more acts of molestation than there are charges, and we don't have a clear election, which in and of itself wouldn't be enough to cure the double jeopardy problem. Like I've said, the state's election in closing is not clear as to the molestation. The state may not have said, now you can rely on the same acts, but that is not the standard. This court undertakes a rigorous review of the record to ensure the jury did not rely on the same act, and we simply don't have that here. With that, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Janice Albert. I represent Snohomish County in this matter, the state. I'm here today because the state made a mistake. The state should have asked in the jury instructions, and it should have charged in the charging document, language that said that the rape charge was separate, based on an act separate and distinct from the molestation charges. That's a given. What the state did created the possibility of a double jeopardy violation. But the state corrected that possibility in the way it charged the case, in the way it actually, the court gave instructions, and considering the testimony and the evidence together. And that's what this court needs to do.
Was there a clear election?
There was a clear election that the act upon which the state was basing its charge of rape was the oral sex that the defendant and this little girl engaged in. The state said that's the act that forms it, that's the oral sex, oral genital conduct, that's it. The state then in its argument, and that was supported by the evidence, because that was the only evidence in the trial, the only evidence that even came close to oral genital conduct, that even came close to a rape as defined by the jury. In that way, this is a little bit different from a case where you have a rape from penetration, because with penetration, you often have a close call. Was there actually penetration or was there touching that was only a molest? But in this case, oral genital contact was very different from any of the other conduct in which the girl said they engaged with this defendant. Now, I forgot the
last
sentence.
Was there a clear election as to the molestation?
Yes, a clear election on the molestation. The state first argued this was the rape and then said everything else that happened was molest. The state asked the jury to base its decision on the three different types of conduct, not three different acts. It said pick one of these acts of conduct that involved lying on the bed with the defendant's penis touching the girl in the front, lying on the bed with the defendant's penis touching the girl without any specification of where, and rely on the incidents where the girls were asked to put their hand on the defendant's penis during the truth or dare games. That conduct is all entirely different from the conduct of oral genital that was the basis for the rape charge. So that if you look at the evidence the way it came in, it was clear. And if you look at the argument the way it was made, it was clear. There were 4-2 convict instructions. There were three of them, the ones on the molest, were very different from the one on the rape in that they contain that separate and distinct language. So there was even a clue to the jury there. On this one, you're going to hear about one rape and you're going to convict for that. But on these others, you're going to hear about a lot of molest and you need to decide separately and distinctly, and there was a Petridge instruction, which one of them actually constitutes the basis for the molest charges. So this case is very different from any of the other cases. I provided the court with some cases from other jurisdictions yesterday that are not binding authority, but they're interesting in that in those cases as well, there are cases where they're all rapes. They're all rapes about penetration, as are some of the published cases. And yet, there was enough in the argument, there was enough of an election that there was no problem. And as Your Honor pointed out, the language is this: was it manifestly apparent to the jury that the state wasn't seeking to punish this man twice for one incident? And that was manifestly apparent. This jury had a lot of decisions to make. It had to decide whether he had molested one sister. It had to decide if he had molested and raped this sister. So the prosecutor spent a lot of time discussing things other than this election. But when she made the election, it was clear and it was unequivocal.
What about the complexity that flows from the testimony that came in about one incident being more inside and then clarified that no, not penetration?
You know, that was funny, and I was thinking to myself, wow, if we had had an instruction that said sexual intercourse is both penetration and oral genital contact, then there would have been a problem. Luckily, we didn't. And it's funny, the court and the parties both discussed that, too. The court said, I only see evidence of one rape here. Are we all agreeing on that? This is not in front of the jury, of course. And defense attorney said, yeah, right, that time on all fours where she said there might have been penetration, but there wasn't. We're not talking about that, right? And everyone agreed, right, we're not talking about that. I don't know why anyone brought it up in closing, frankly, but it wasn't something the jury was instructed in, and so it couldn't have created that problem. It was at best a molest. There's nothing in the definition of sexual intercourse that would have made it a double jeopardy problem.
Which seems to be pretty restrictive in analyzing the doctrine of manifestly apparent. Fuentes' more recent Supreme Court decision seems to be much more flexible in applying that concept. Is that the test we apply? Has the test migrated, or is it the same test?
Judge, I looked at the language in both of those tests, and I think that it boils down to the same thing. If it was manifestly apparent to the jury that the state was not seeking to convict twice for the same offense, then there's not a double jeopardy determination. And while Fuentes goes into somewhat greater detail discussing what it does, I think Fuentes was a case where there were rapes and molests, and much was the case where there were only five rapes, and so maybe that caused the difference in their discussion about what had happened. But I think what is important, one thing is how closely the argument matched the testimony. This wasn't a case where anyone was saying that there had been testimony about several different kinds of oral contact or different kinds of rape. The testimony was really clear on this. One time he raped me, the other times he molested me, although the victim, of course, didn't use those words. Those were the words that the prosecutor and the defense put on those actions, and I think it was correct. The jury could not have been confused about this. I think, too, that separate and distinct language, and I don't know if I said this before, so I apologize if I did, the inclusion of that in the convictions in the to convict instructions for the molest were really helpful because they said you're going to hear a whole bunch of molest counts, and you need to be separate and distinct on those. You only heard about one rape. So I think in the end, that lack might be part of what helps us determine that this conviction is in fact sound. If you have no other questions, I have nothing to add.
Thank you.
First and foremost, I'd like to point this court to the Much decision at page 664. The Much court says it must be manifestly apparent to the jury the state was not seeking to impose multiple punishments for the same offense and that each count was based on a separate act. And that's the crux of the argument here, whether it's manifestly apparent that each count was based on a separate act. And we simply don't have the instructions or a clear election, which is not legally sufficient under CURE anyway, to ensure that that is manifestly apparent based on the record as a whole. I would also again point this court to the state's closing, and I'll again give the pages of 229 to 231 in the report of proceedings. The state never says, pick these acts to rely on these counts. The state simply describes conduct that would meet the definition of molestation. Not to mention, as I pointed out in the briefing, there is other conduct, the showering incident, which would meet the definition of molestation. And so the state acknowledges there's at least 12 acts that could encompass molestation. You can rely on any one of those. You just have to make sure you're unanimous. And so his right to a unanimous verdict is protected by that, but his right to be free from double jeopardy is not. For these reasons, we'd ask the court to dismiss one of the child molestation convictions. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is State versus Wynn.